You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
We're okay. We're gonna be okay. It's okay.
How is this okay?
Because we're gonna get there and we're gonna find them. We're gonna find Mayday and they're gonna help us.
You keep saying that, but you don't know. Do you have some secret, brilliant plan? What is it? What's the plan?
We're okay.
I'm not a mushroom. I'm not.
Okay.
So you can't keep me in the dark and feed me lies and shit and expect me to just be okay with it.
I don't do that.
Yes, you do.
Everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is House Podcastica, the Handmaid's Tale edition.
This week we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 4, Episode 4, Milk.
Did anyone have any overarching thoughts about this episode, or do you want to just, you know, jump right into the top three?
Overall, I liked it. It was really unique. It was so surreal to have part of it take place in a big vat of milk, which I thought was kind of cool. And I thought I was interested in all the backstory of Janine, the June and Janine dynamics, and also the stuff with Rita and Fred and Serena, all really fascinating. And I think this show does character so well. And so, yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. I like to be surprised, and I tried to think of where the last episode leaving off would take us, and I was very surprised. I didn't think there was
We had guessed, like, maybe instead of waterboarding, it would be milkboarding, just as a joke, but it was kind of not too far from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was happy, okay? We got that Janine story that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get a little bit more info on her and her background, and when they were going through her story and she's going to the abortion clinic, I was just wondering, is this before or after she had her first child, the one that we know that she had, or did she decide not to have it? But I'll save all the rest of that for getting into our top three, but I'm glad that you guys liked it as well.
Yeah, I thought about you because you'd been saying you'd wanted some Janine stuff, and I'm like, well, here's some.
Yeah.
Maybe I was not really exactly what you thought, but
no, but I liked
it's hard
it.
To know what to expect, yeah.
I feel like Janine, we learned a bit about Janine in this episode, not just in those flashbacks, but also in some of the things that happened. So I was very pleased with that. I think Madeline Brewer is killing it as Janine. So I feel like we're ready to jump into the top three. So who wants to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first this time.
Okay.
All right.
So my number three is about the kind of power slash status dynamic between Janine and June, because Janine, she's a really interesting character. We've all kind of said, she was kind of annoying at first, but we came to like her. And part of what I like about her is that she seems, she has a great spirit, and she has been through so much, and yet she can still be the one who's, you know, laughing and dancing whenever she, you know, a couple episodes ago, or making cracking jokes and stuff. And I think that's at first easy to dismiss as, oh, she's kooky or whatever, but it says something about her character that after everything she's been in, she could still find that place where she could find some joy, you know? And I think that speaks, especially as we saw in this episode, there's a resilience and a resourcefulness that goes along with that. And June, she, I think, has seen Janine as someone that she needs to take care of, because she has had to take care of her a lot. Like when she talked her down from killing herself, you know? And even here, after the whole thing with the other handmaids getting killed, she's got to tell Janine, it's okay, come on, we're going to go, we're going to make it. So she's always like her protector, or supposedly kind of acting that way anyway. But here Janine realizes that June's reckless. She wants to go to war and, or go to the war front in Chicago. And she's saying, I won't let anything happen to you. But then it's like, our friends just died, you know? And as Moira said, June kind of takes the big swing and fuck the consequences. And so if she's sitting here saying, I won't let anything happen to you, I was thinking, well, either you're lying because you don't know if you can protect her. You weren't able to protect the others, or you're in denial, or a little bit of both, maybe. And so in the milk truck, when June says, we're going to be okay and we're going to find Mayday, and Janine says, you keep saying that, but you don't know. So she's like, our friends are dead now. I'm not going to go along with this. Like, you know, and then I loved when she goes, do you have some secret brilliant plan? What is it? What's the plan? Well, I'm not a mushroom. There's this pause. Okay.
I love that too.
So you
too.
Can't keep me in the dark and feed me lies and shit and expect me to just be okay with it. So June says, I don't do that, which, and Janine's like, yes, you do. So I think June is a bit in denial about what she does and what she says and what she can actually do. And as we said, as I said last time, maybe as a revolutionary leader, you have to have some of that where you need to be focused on the goal and accept that it's going to be messy. But anyway, then they have the whole thing about, you know, did you tell the eyes where we were? And I'm really glad that June admitted that she did and said why, because of Hannah. But I also can totally understand that Janine would not just accept that and be happy with it. You know, she says, I wouldn't have told them. Who knows? Maybe she would have, maybe she wouldn't. We don't know. I mean, this episode shows that she's resourceful, so maybe she could have handled that better than June, but it's doubtful, you know? Like, if I was June in that situation, I would have said, okay, you're telling me that if Charlotte was in danger, you wouldn't give us up to save Charlotte, you know? Because that's kind of an arguing tactic that I have, trying to get the person to see some, you know, put themselves in someone else's shoes. But anyway, it's a tough situation, you know, like she got her friends died. So of course she's going to be upset. But, anyway, then June says, you know, what did she say? I should have left you a long time ago.
Yep.
And, so they're not happy with each other. And then the whole, train looter thing happens. And Janine right away says, I don't like these guys. Are they Mayday? They're mean, which I think shows her intuition because they don't turn out to be great. And then the whole thing with this leader, Steven, says, which one of you is staying with me? Nothing's free here. And June immediately says, not her. Like, she's in that protective mode. I got to protect Janine, not her. But then, like when she was with Commander Winslow, is that his name, at Jezebel's? She can't do this anymore. It's just like she's allergic to it. She can't be raped anymore. And I was happy to see that. And when he's telling her to get down and he says, I guess you're used to this. That's like, awful. Dude, she might bite that thing off at this point. I wouldn't be so cavalier.
I definitely
you don't know
wouldn't.
What you're dealing with.
You don't know what she's been through.
Yeah.
Like, they have no idea.
Yeah. But then she doesn't do it and she's ready to leave. And then Janine just understands everything that happened. She kind of gives June this task to get clothes and she goes back and is with Steven, and she comes back. That wasn't so bad. He thinks my eye patch is cool, which is kind of funny, even though it's horrible what she had to do. But that still was a moment of resourcefulness for Janine. She took care of June, and she had the stomach to do something that June couldn't bear. And I think that might have shifted the dynamic between the two of them. It might raise Janine up in June's mind a little bit to be more of a partner, and maybe not seem like Janine needs June way more than June needs Janine anymore. She's not a mushroom. So it'll be interesting to see if that dynamic does change at all after this. I don't know.
I hope so.
This was my number two. Same thing. It was really a seesaw of their relationship up and down through this episode. And I do think the dynamic changed. They're taking care of each other and they're being really honest with each other. There's not a lot of fakeness or left that they can show
each
other.
They're like sisters.
Yeah. And I thought it started out, could it have been any worse? They left as a group of six. Two were shot, two killed by the train. They're running for their lives, stowing away on an enemy train.
One disappeared, too, because there were seven. Can anybody let me know what happened to that other one?
I would like to still know, at the farm? Too.
I don't know.
Were there seven in the van? I think there were only six.
Only
in the
six.
Van.
But when they were carting after last season, June on the stretcher, there were six carrying her. Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
And then they find themselves in a refrigerated car full of milk. Like, it just keeps getting a little bit worse.
And even there, June's like, come on,
it's
going to
be okay.
Fine. And then she jumps in, it's freezing.
It's like, yeah, they could have
and
drowned
I think
in it.
June is still so, you know, she's just going forward no matter what. She's and Janine is kind of the voice of sanity here. She's the one going, what are you talking about? We're in a refrigerated car going to a war.
Yeah. And I guess if June was being more, she is a little bit in denial, like. If she was being a little more honest with herself and everyone else, maybe she would say, look, this is my cause. I'm willing to die for it. If you are too, come with me. If not, good luck. Take care. You know?
Yeah. She's still trying to handle all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Manage it.
Mm-hmm. She is. And I think she doesn't want to stop. Like, I feel like she's going, and she doesn't want to stop to have to deal with the feelings of loss that she's lost so much already.
Right. That's a good
And
point,
now
yeah.
she's lost two of her closer friends, and she watched them die in front of, I mean, the train hit them right in front of her. I don't think she wants to think about that. I think she wants to just keep focusing on moving ahead and not thinking about the past.
Yeah, and channel all of her feelings into this, like, drive and maybe even a rage at Gilead.
And I feel like this isn't the first time. I feel like she has been running this, and not the entire show, but I feel like this isn't the first instance that she's been so driven to focus on the future because she didn't want to think about the things that had just happened because there was so much. I mean, I think after a while, it just continues to pile up and you almost become numb to it because you just can't take anymore.
Yeah. And maybe when you're in that kind of a position of the kind of person who actually does enact change in this kind of a situation, maybe that's the most effective way, or one of the most effective ways to be, is to just any fear you have or whatever, just push it down and go forward.
Yeah. I mean, they were freezing in that. I was cold watching them in that milk truck. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And even if they drain it, they're still going to be soaked.
And it's refrigerated. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they're still going to be cold.
Yeah, but they were moving forward. Janine was reluctant to go to any piece of that. She didn't want to get on the train. She didn't want to get into the car. And then she didn't want to get out of it. You got to keep moving forward or else you're stuck back in Gilead just waiting to be recaptured.
Right. I forget if Janine had any ideas where to go.
I don't know if she did.
Boston. That's right. Oh, yeah. She wanted to go back and it's like, well, you're going to be punished probably, or just go back to what you were doing before.
Well, and they were in Pennsylvania, so that would have been quite a trek.
Yeah. She wanted to go back to Boston because she said they had friends there. At least that's what she said.
It's like, no, not really anymore.
And I think that June really just wanted to move forward and get the heck out of there because she didn't want that option of going and being pushed back to being a handmaid or whatever worse fate could happen to her.
Like, they could focus on just trying to get out of Gilead, you know, go to Texas or go to Canada somehow. But that's not what June wants.
No.
She wants to do something about it.
She wants to do something big. And I feel like her motto is like, go big or go home, because she just wants to do the biggest thing that she can. Now she's gotten children and Martha's out of Gilead, which was a huge thing. I'm just not sure what it is she wants to do on the front. Like, that is something...
She's just looking for Mayday. That's what she's saying, you know, like, let's find Mayday and we'll fight. And who knows how specific she is beyond that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Maybe she's just like, I'll figure out what to do once I get there. You know, she's kind of got that attitude a lot of times.
Yeah, I was a little concerned in this episode because at the beginning, they were showing, like, previously on The Handmaid's Tale, and it was showing June learning about Janine's son, Caleb, dying. And I was afraid at one point when they were in the milk truck that she was going to tell her that she lied about her son.
I thought about that, and I honestly think she owes Janine the truth. I don't know when the time to tell her that is.
But it seems like the longer you wait, the worse it might be.
But she would want someone to tell her the truth about Hannah.
Absolutely. And then after that, and they show us Janine's backstory, I thought that's why they showed it. That's why they showed it.
Yeah. Because to remind us that she has a son and the son died. I guess we'll get into it. But yeah, I mean, I thought that, just to quickly say, I thought that whole story, until we find out it wasn't, I thought it was about him. Like, I thought, oh, she's not going to get an abortion, clearly, because she has a son.
Yeah, and that actually is my number three, Janine's backstory. As you know, I've been wanting a Janine backstory for a while. So I liked that we got to see this piece of her. You know, we see her as she was a waitress at Denny's. Like, she's trying to go to an appointment, and she's kind of not arguing, but pushing away from her supervisor about, I really can't come in. I have to go do this. I can't reschedule this doctor's appointment. She really wants to take care of this.
It's time sensitive.
That's what she said. And so she goes to this first clinic. And I feel like this is, we obviously weren't in Gilead. However, I feel like that.
Kind of were.
Yeah, that method of thinking, based on this one clinic worker's behavior, was starting to come into play. Because basically, Janine thinks she's going there to get an abortion, and the clinic worker just basically tries to talk her out of it. She tries to talk her into, well, can't you raise this baby with a father? You know, she wants to help her understand and help her make the best choice, telling her that terrible thing about abortion, about what happens during the procedure. And she's preying on her emotions. So when Janine leaves, I feel like Janine's a little bit conflicted, because I think she knows she really isn't in a position to have a child. Another one, as we learn that she already has the one. But she goes home and she reads the pamphlet over. And then we see her go to the new doctor. And the new doctor has just a few simple questions and is in a completely different place, saying it's none of my business. And that doctor explains the, quote, crisis pregnancy centers, which is where Janine had gone the first time. So we see Janine having to make this difficult choice. And it helped me understand that she's a lot stronger than I thought she was.
Yeah. I think that was kind of the point, right? To kind of pair with what we were seeing between her and June.
Yeah, because I think I've always seen, when you meet Janine at the beginning and she's kind of this, you know, she doesn't want to listen to rules, and then they take her eye because she's talking back and being sassy. So after that, Janine kind of goes a little bit crazy. And I think from that point, I just assumed she was fragile the entire time.
Yeah.
The whole thing with Angela, Charlotte, you know, her daughter. I just thought, you know, Janine's really fragile. She's not very, you know, she's not really very strong. This really showed me that she does have a lot of strength in her. And we just haven't seen that so much.
But the interesting thing about it to me is I don't feel like it really contradicts what we've seen. She's kind of impulsive, and she lets her emotions sort of take over, to where she gets a little out of control sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like I said, she's always had that spirit. I mean, just the fact that she was being sassy, you know, And so I that's why I liked it, because it did feel like a revelation about her. And at the same time, to me anyway, it didn't feel like that doesn't go with what we've seen before, you know.
I kind of want to go back and watch some of the other episodes again to see if there were, you know, knowing what I know now from this backstory, if that affects how I'm looking at her character in other episodes.
Mm-hmm. I think she's had to fight most of her life. She's struggled and had to fight. And it doesn't seem like very many people cared about her or helped her. So when she is given a kind word by the doctor, or given some, hey, your opinion is actually valuable, she seems shocked and overwhelmed by that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like that with Aunt, what the fuck is her name? Lydia?
Yeah.
Lydia.
Can't believe I forgot
Good
that.
Good old Lydia.
She's like that with her too. Like, when Lydia's nice to her, she appreciates it, even though you shouldn't care what that chick says.
That is not the word you wanted to use, Jason. I'm quite sure it was something else.
She's so starved. So her backstory is my number three. It was so sweet to see Janine and Caleb together and see her as, you know, a loving, caring mom.
Yeah.
I really liked that part.
And makes it more tragic that what happened.
Yep.
It does. And I loved that she was singing to him, because she was singing that Bob Marley song.
Yeah.
And
such a good mom.
So good. I mean, it was a situation where she didn't have all sorts of, you know, a lot of things to give him, but she gave him what he needed the most, and that's love. And she was doing the best she could to create a life for her and her son. And I was really even more endeared to her. And I feel like over the last two seasons, this season so far, and last season was when I really started to like her character. And now I just, at the end of it, I hope she gets out of Gilead the most.
I wouldn't count on it, but I really hope so.
I'm so scared. Like, after last week's.
At first I thought it was odd that Janine was the one to survive, but now it makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm
looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I'm liking where they're going.
Yeah.
With her story. Yeah. And the two of them together, they're comrades.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're sisters, I think. They have a sisterhood, the two of them together. I think, even though they don't agree all the time, and Janine is really starting to speak up even more, I like that. Because June does need to, she needs that conscience on her shoulder. She really does. I feel like she does not realize it.
To some extent, yeah.
Yeah. I think she's going so fast, she's not really stopping to think about the repercussions.
Mm-hmm. And even in some weird way, that whole thing about Janine sort of surprising her at the end there, I think it seemed like it did get her to stop and just sort of consider the situation. Like, oh, things aren't exactly the way that I thought they were.
No, and she doesn't. June doesn't have to carry everything herself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
She has Janine, and she needs to, I think Janine is trying to show her, hey, you're not alone.
We're a
we
team
can
here.
Do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think June needs that, because even someone as strong as June has been, the time comes, you can only take so much before you break.
You crack, yeah.
And she needs someone to be there to help her. Yeah. So I'm down. Totally down. I'm on Team Janine.
I mean, I'm on Team June too, but it's just sometimes you need some little help. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
All right. Well, since Wendy and I kind of had the same number three, that I guess we will transition to Jason and your number two.
Okay, let's talk about Rita. I think this might have been my favorite Rita episode. She was great. And it was a really interesting journey for her too. Like, talking with Moira, and Moira tells her that Serena wants to talk to her, and she can tell, she's like, I don't know, you know, that's weird, uncomfortable. But Moira sells her on it by like saying, you know, you could, like, women would kill to have a chance to say their piece here. And so it's like she's going to go there and tell Serena off. But then when she gets there, it reminded me of times when I think I'm going to tell someone off, and you get there and it's like, you feel sheepish about it, you know, and Serena's being all warm and nice, and she's being manipulative like she always did, trying to get Rita to do what she wants, like she did with Fred last time. But when she let Rita, Rita's sort of not, you know, letting herself buy into it. But when she let Rita know she was pregnant, that was so much a part of what Gilead was all about and what they were focused on and important to them. And Rita's like, just, you can see her whole body language shift. Oh my God, it's a miracle. And they're so happy it's a boy, because in their society, I guess it's because men have the power, so they're hoping for a boy. I don't know. And then Serena's like, let's pray, which is connecting with Rita on a level she knows is important to Rita, faith. And so even though we know Serena's manipulative, and I think even Rita in that moment might have realized it a little bit, I don't know, but it was hard not to be moved by that connection between them. I still felt moved by it. But I think where Serena went wrong is she should have in that moment tried to convince Rita to help her with her defense. Right? I see you're nodding, Daphne.
Absolutely. Yes, I think so. Because I think Rita was blindsided by that.
And then it's like when you're surprised like that, it's like, oh, that's what that was for. Whereas, because Mark told her, but if she had sort of used, Serena had used that as an in and said, you know, I'm in big trouble here, and tried to talk her into it, then maybe she could have gotten buy-in. You know, I say this as a person who tries to convince people to do things sometimes.
I wasn't moved by it
at all.
You know, I think I felt a little differently on the second watch, and the second watch just really pissed me off. Yeah, you can see how enmeshed Rita still is with them. And it almost reminded me of like Stockholm syndrome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for me. It's not like nothing is. Well, not nothing, but a lot of times things aren't super simple. Like, I think when you're in a situation like that, there can be some genuine connection, but ultimately, fuck them. I mean, as Rita said, you know, what did she say? That she was considered property of them, registered and everything, like my old Nissan Altima. So that's what really matters, that she was their slave. And so, yeah. I'm glad that I think she came to her senses when she came home and thought about it. And then she wanted to go and see Fred, and she found out that Serena wanted her to blame Fred. And so she goes to see Fred, and that time, I mean, she was ready for it. Like when Fred said, it's nice to see a friendly face, she said, we aren't friends. So I wasn't sure. I think that might've been in part because she was closer to Serena than Fred, but also just she was like, oh, no, I'm not going to let them take advantage of me, you know, after what happened with Serena. So then she doesn't want to tell Fred whether she's with her family. And Fred says, of course, you're free to do as you please. She says, yes, I am. Like, and I don't need you to tell me that. That's kind of the point of freedom. But anyway, the last part about this is that Rita let Fred know about his baby, and Serena was trying to hide it from him. And I'm like, why did she do that? And I'm not sure if she just wanted to stick it to them. I mean, she tells him, you need to deal with your family. I'm not doing that anymore. But
I think it was revenge. And I think it was also severing that cord.
Closer. Yeah.
I mean, she could have just not gone and see them anymore. I mean, I also wondered if part of it was that she is a very religious person, and she doesn't, you know, the idea of Serena being separated and not telling Fred that he has a son is not morally right for her. But, and I don't like that either, actually. But I also think it was a little bit just to move the plot forward. that Fred needs to know this to move the plot forward.
Yes.
And listeners have pointed out that if Fred is actually able to father a child, then he might be Nicole's father.
Yes.
So that we need to know what happens. Oh, yes. That.
Oh my gosh, right? That didn't occur to me.
It didn't occur to me until I read feedback. And then I was like, that's really true.
Right? I think that's the whole point of this.
But I think this was... So Rita was my number one.
And mine.
Rita's relationship was mostly with Serena because Fred sat in his office and didn't have much to do with the house details.
Yeah.
And Rita cares about Serena. You know, the whole time they were in Gilead, they were sort of considered a family unit. And they wanted this baby. You know, everything was focused on getting a baby that, as we know, would have probably been turned over to the Marthas to raise for the most part.
And she had really bought into it.
Yes. Into it. And so when she sees that sonogram, you can see it on her face. She is genuinely happy for Serena and excited. And I think she walks away from that kind of comforted, thinking, you know, it's nice to be with somebody who understands what it was like there and that considers them my friend. But I think all that's part of her enmeshment with them, and she's not free of it yet. And then when she gets that subpoena from Mark, she realizes it's she's just the same the, old, yeah. same
it's,
old from
yep,
she's
it's continuing
just
on.
A pawn. Yeah, and they're just using her. And when Fred and Serena, they both say the same thing. Serena says, it's nice to have a friend. And Fred says, it's nice to see a friendly face. And this is just their fucking arrogance. They assume that Rita is their friend. They don't see the glaring truth, which is that she was their slave.
Yeah. I mean, I think they probably know, well, she, you know, escaped Gilead, so she wasn't exactly happy, but they're just trying to go back to the way it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they assume, but they're just hoping that she'll go for it, you know?
Yeah.
I like to think that Rita, something Moira said to Rita, which was she would have the going to see Serena, she would have the opportunity to say her piece to Serena's face and get closure. Or she could leave her to rot. And I think Rita went in good faith. She went to see Serena. And then when she realized what was going on, I feel like going to see Fred was like her version of, okay, I'm just going to go here. I'm going to tell you to deal with your family. It's not my job anymore. And I thank God for that every day. She hands over the sonogram. And I think that's her closure. And now she can move on because at the beginning...
Yeah, she just went like this with her hands. Like at
yes!
The
yep.
At the beginning, we see her making bread like she did in Gilead, but at the end, we see her eating sushi with chopsticks. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
She's
liked that.
Integrating.
That's such a great point.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
but I
liked
she,
it.
I get what you guys are saying, but I still feel like if she really just was like, forget these people... then she could have just not gone back. No one was forcing her to. By going to Fred and telling him, by choosing to do that, she knew that wasn't what Serena wanted. And so it feels like, A, either there was a hint of a jab there at all of them, like, I'm going to fuck them up a little bit, or B, it was just a bit of a plot thing to get the plot going. I don't know.
Probably both.
Yeah.
But, I do think it was a, hey, how to best get somebody out of your life.
Yeah. They were not going to be coming to her anymore for help.
Exactly. Like, that's the best way. Just fuck them over royally.
That's true.
And they're not
You're
coming
right.
back to you.
Yep.
No. Yeah.
You hope.
No. And I think, too, to Wendy's point earlier, I think Rita wants to do the right thing.
That's
true.
This, yeah, that's
I think
part
this
of it
is
too.
Part
yeah.
of it, too. I think she's still faithful, you know, to God.
The only
not
thing is
Gilead,
if she...
but God.
Yeah, but if she had thought of what I just said, that, oh, this might mean that Fred is Nicole's father, then maybe she wouldn't want to do that because that could stir up some trouble maybe for Nicole or...
It definitely could. I'm still, my mind is blown by that, and I can't wait to get to feedback, because I haven't read any of it, and I have no idea what people are saying or thinking, so I'm excited to get to that in a bit.
Me too.
Just one more note about Rita. I thought in the last scene, as Daphne said, we see Rita sitting down in her own kitchen, eating a meal of Japanese food, and to me, it was showing how full spectrum she's come, that she's finally freed a little of the Gilead, and it feels in control of her own destiny, and she's taking joy in this little thing of eating what she wants, when she wants it, where she wants it, how she wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Something that, you know, she was a slave before.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's modern, it's non-traditional, it's something from where she is now, so it's like becoming more settled in this new place.
Yeah.
All right. My number two is kind of June, Janine, and what's left of Chicago. I believe that they're in Chicago, at least. When they're driving in to... When the looters decide that they'll take them, which I wasn't sure if they were... I knew they wouldn't shoot them because that wouldn't drive the story ahead. But...
kind of ended.
they weren't very nice. I was concerned. I'm like, these are not the people that you want to be around. Like, they're not good people.
Yeah. And you wonder, is this what Mayday's like? So I like that June at the end was like, you're not Mayday, are you? What's Mayday? Just sort of checking in. Like, okay, good. Mayday might be decent.
I wrote in my notes that when they first saw June and Janine, they acted like they were unicorns. Like,
yes,
something they had never seen before, and
they knew,
not in a good way either.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, guy says, you know, oh, you have owners.
Sex slaves.
Yeah. Oh, sex slave in America. And you think that he's saying, God, I can't believe that would actually happen. But really, you find out he's like admires it, or almost maybe.
It was like a perverse curiosity. Yeah.
And he didn't know that until in hindsight, though, after he did what he did.
He welcomed her back, like he welcomed them back to America. So we knew that Chicago was kind of a shit show.
Anyway. He said,
what is it, by the
welcome
way?
Back. It like... It's a fucking disaster.
I thought
that was hilarious.
So is Chicago like a holdout and they're fighting not to become part of Gilead?
The border, and it's further south than any other city in Gilead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're trying, you know, it's a holdout. They don't want to be part of Gilead. So they're fighting. And this is one group of rebels. I mean, I don't know, because we haven't seen episode 5 yet. So I don't know, you know, what's going to happen in that one. But I'm really interested to find out a little bit more about this group, even though they kind of scare me a bit. I want to learn a little bit more about them before I make a final determination, because just because Steven's a bit of a jerk, maybe some of the others aren't. I'm not sure. So I reserve judgment.
Yeah, like, I was wondering who they are. Like, are they rebels, or maybe they're just opportunists, you know, taking advantage of the chaos? Well, they're starving, so I don't know if they're opportunists, but they're trying to stay alive, and I guess... Yeah, who knows?
Survivors. We don't know what their motivations are yet.
So who knows if they're really like rebels fighting, or if they're just trying to hide and survive.
Yeah.
Right. Their attack of the train may have just been to get food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seemed like it. He said we haven't had anything for weeks before the train.
And they're trying to be careful, like they only have a certain amount of time. This isn't the first time that they've done something like this. Because they know we've got to get through, you know, we have to do this quickly. We have to get back to base, etc. The way that they shot them in the back of the truck when they're driving through the city, before we get the bigger view of what, you know, the buildings in the background destroyed or whatever. It's really interesting to see how the city looks almost, it's like destroyed, dilapidated, really messed up, but it looks more normal to today's world than it does to, like, the Gilead world is, like, almost on another planet with their little, everything is so organized and it looks very old school to me. This looked more like urban.
Mm-hmm. I think this place that they were in was a climbing gym, because I thought I saw a climbing wall, but
that would make sense.
A lot of holes, so it seems like it's war torn.
Yeah, the whole area seemed very war torn.
Yeah,
it was interesting. They said there's a lot of clothes because the department stores were full, and I was like, I think it would be like that in the zombie apocalypse too.
Me too. So
whatever they want.
I often wonder that when I'm watching shows like that, I'm like, why? I know their clothes are old and torn up, but there should still be some clothes left so you could get something else. But they never seem to find them. It's always...
Daryl needs a new vest.
Yes, it needs to happen.
I really liked this part of showing what Chicago looked like. I find that very fascinating. The Chicago skyline looks really devastated. It reminded me of scenes of World War II, Warsaw, or Stalingrad, or something like that. It was, I thought that was really great, and I'm super excited to see where it goes from here.
Me too. I'm really into, like, urban exploring, not doing it myself, but there's just this thing where people will go to old buildings,
abandoned
stuff. Yeah. Like Chernobyl and Fukushima, where the nuclear reactor in Japan.
Or in America, malls.
Malls. Yes, malls. So I'm really into that. Like, I like to watch that and see what things look like. So for me, seeing stuff like this reminds me of that. So I like to see the environment, because I feel like in some cases in movies especially, but also on TV shows, the environment becomes its own character in the story. And I think I really just enjoyed seeing this. So I want to learn more about these non-Mayday rebels. Like, who are they? What are they doing? You know, are they just existing, or are they rebels and actually fighting back? Who knows? Hopefully episode 5 will give us a little insight into that.
Yep.
So that is pretty much my number 2. So, Jason, what is your number 1?
It's about Janine's backstory, which we already talked a lot about, but I wanted to focus a little bit more in on what happened at this pregnancy crisis center. Is that what they called it? Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, whatever you think about abortion, whether it's okay, it's clear that this place falsely advertised themselves as a place to get an abortion so they can try to get women to reconsider. So that's deceptive. And the language they use, I mean, I don't even want to read it, but the whole thing about getting an infection if there's a toe or a finger.
That was gruesome.
I was looking it up, and there can be an infection in surgical abortion, but it's very rare. And they give antibiotics to prevent the risk of infection. And also, she wasn't even at the stage where she would need that, as we saw. She just needed medication. And so then she said, all women regret doing this. Not true. And just the language that she used, it just made me cringe so much. And the second doctor, when Janine was feeling guilty because of what happened at the first place and starts explaining herself guiltily, she's all, wait a minute, do you want to be pregnant? No. Okay. You're fine then. Don't need to tell me anymore. It's none of my business. That was very comforting to see someone who will just serve what she wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I don't know. It's kind of a hot topic, I guess, but I wanted to say something about it.
This is one of my points. I'm so lost on our points, but this is one of my points. So this is straight out of 2021 in America. There are thousands of pregnancy crisis clinics that, if you Google abortion clinics, these come up. And when you call them and I would say, hi, I'm Wendy and I'm looking to get an abortion, they would say, great, when can you come in? And they would make an appointment with you, and then you would go in, and this is exact language that would be used.
Wow.
Most of these places do not have any medical personnel. They don't have any nurses. They don't have any doctors. These are just volunteers or counselors or whatever. And so this is reality that we're living with in 2021, and they've only increased since a lot of the legislation has changed in a lot of the southern states and things like that. Yeah, so it's only increased, and they've only been emboldened by state legislation. And whether or not you agree or disagree that abortion is morally right or wrong or should be legal or not legal, it's a contrived pattern of providing women in vulnerable positions with disinformation.
Yeah.
Which is pretty despicable.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think the point of it, as we kind of alluded to earlier, was to show something about Janine's character where she faced that challenge, and you think maybe she was going to get swept up into doing something that she didn't want to do, or not doing something, or, you know, having a baby, even though she didn't want to. But no, she did what she originally intended, even though it was hard. So mm-hmm. It's just showing her fortitude, I guess.
And I also think, like Daphne, like you, originally we thought this was her pregnancy with Caleb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that they were going to be successful. And
right. Yeah. And just that it's not shows that this wasn't about Janine being a great mother or being a loving mother. This was about Janine not even being able to get off of work to go to a medical appointment. Yeah. And obviously the stress of thinking about bringing another child into that situation.
And we know from how she was with Charlotte that she's a fantastic mother.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Well, my number one was Rita. And I feel like we've talked a lot about her situation and what, you know, going to be with Serena, coming to all of these realizations and, you know, taking the steps that she took to go see Commander Waterford. One thing that I thought tied everything together, too, is at the end when she's just before she eats the sushi, she prayed. And to me, that was... she's still faithful. That was not coming into question. But to me, she's mixing my old life with my new life and now moving forward. And I just, at that moment, thought, good for you, Rita. Good for you. I was proud of her for doing what she did with the Waterfords, for actually going in and getting closure and shutting the door, because she'd been through a lot. And you can't hope for more than what we saw from her. I feel like this was her best episode.
And I think it's great that, you know, as to illustrate what Margaret Atwood said, that The Handmaid's Tale is not anti-religious, to have a character like Rita who keeps her faith and reclaims it, kind of.
Mm-hmm. And I would think her faith is probably what got her through a lot of that.
Yeah.
Her personal relationship.
I mean, you could imagine, I don't know, but that it might have confused her being in Gilead and thinking, oh, this place is so holy and full of faith and that's great. And having to separate that out and go, no, they're using it to control people. You know, I don't know. Yeah. We didn't really see that, but maybe.
I think, too, there's been moments where you can tell that June is still faithful. She's still, mm-hmm. She believes in God.
She is, yeah.
Even after everything she's been through, because she has separated Gilead and God in her mind. They're not one thing. Yeah. She has split it up, and Gilead, she realizes Gilead is not God, and Gilead is evil and bad, and she's... wants to wreak holy havoc on them. And I'm ready to see whatever she wants to bring. Yeah, I'm ready for whatever she wants to bring along. But Rita was my number one. Wendy, did you have any other notes that you wanted to add on Reader? Because I know she was also your number one.
I think I'm good with Rita. I had one note that it seems like Mara keeps becoming responsible to dash people's hopes and dreams. In episode two, Mara had to tell little Asher that he would never see his mom and dad again. Mm. He would never go home again. Here we see Mara being the one to tell Rita that they can't find her family.
Did we know she was looking for a family? I forgot that.
I didn't think so.
I think that's new.
I didn't
know. She has a cousin, or what was it?
Her sister and her nephew.
Sister and a nephew, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also bringing the bad news that Serena wanted to see her. So I think Mara's great at this, and she offers kindness and compassion, and I think her take on it is great, but I'm sure that's not an easy job for Mara to always be put in.
Not at all. Seeing her in this episode reminded me how far she's come, because she's coming to deliver the information to Rita. And it wasn't that long ago that Moira was in the very same situation and was new to getting into Canada and escaping and had to go through similar feelings. And to see them both sitting at the table together, it really just... It's like, wow, this is an indication of how much further Rita has to go. But I feel hopeful that she can get there. And especially after the events of this episode, I feel even more hopeful that she's going to be able to rebuild and have a life that she deserves.
I don't think we usually get as complete and satisfying arc as we had in this episode with Rita. It was good.
Yeah.
It was what we needed.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's it was a gift for sure.
Yeah. I mean, just seeing Serena and Fred all locked up every week is kind of a little gift in itself.
Oh, it is. It definitely is.
But we'll see what happens. I mean, there could be a war with Canada and none of these people could be safe. You never know. I mean, Moira and Luke and Rita.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's hope for something better than that. I'm hoping.
Not me. I want drama.
You have Fear the Walking Dead for that, Jason.
Right. This is the show we go to where we just get nice things and get to feel good every week. Yeah, you're right.
Sure. Yeah, no. Does anyone else have any notes? I have just one on my list.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up the music in this series, which I'm always impressed with how they always pick the right tone for whatever music they decide to play. Like last week when they were running to the train, we got this song. And then this week when June is changing into her clothes and staring down at her handmaid's, you know, robes and dress, there's, to me, it just added the right tension to the scene to hit it home. And so I think they're doing such a fantastic job with it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring that up.
The aesthetics are always on point, musically and visually, on this show.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
And they use it sparingly, really effectively.
Yeah. The show's very minimal, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just as long of pauses in our podcast as they do in their... Just kidding.
I also like the scene when Rita does go to see Serena and the way like it's snowing outside and the room is dark and there's just this little bit of light coming in and Rita comes in and then there's light just on their faces and they're just doing such a fantastic job. They're doing this. They're telling the story with using everything at their disposal, not just the dialogue or the characters. It's everything. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that.
But you mentioned Fear, and Fear the Walking Dead, when they got into, some people don't care about this, but when they made this big shift with new showrunners in season four, they also got new cinematographers or some superstar cinematographer. And the show has looked really good ever since then. But all I can say for it. Yeah, then people talk. And they do something that is the opposite of Handmaid's Tale, where the Handmaid's Tale will let the actors do the work with their body language, like you mentioned before, Daphne, or their expressions or whatever, and have very little dialogue, if any. And in Fear, they fucking explicate everything about themselves as if they're writing a paper to their professor about their own personalities.
It's a dissertation.
Which is different every week.
Or a capstone project.
Totally unrelated to anything we're talking about.
I have a couple notes on Steven.
Okay.
Steven offers, Steven withholds help or clothes and food and shelter in exchange for sex. I think the show put this scene in to pound home the fact that sex crimes and rape comes in all different forms, especially in times of conflict. Women and men are preyed upon. And just because this isn't Gilead anymore doesn't mean that June and Janine are safe here or that these people are good. And I think because Gilead is so horrifying that we kind of have, well, everybody in Canada is good or everybody outside of Gilead is good. But I think this show is just showing how it is actually very complicated and there are shades of gray in between.
Yeah. Which is something we've been saying from the beginning.
Yeah, I thought he was especially despicable. Why bring them along at all if you weren't going to freely help them? He seemed to have a grotesque curiosity about them, calling them sex slaves.
He probably had this
slaves.
In mind from the moment he decided to bring them, And he thought, oh, handmaids, I know what they are.
Yeah.
I want a handmaid.
And I mean, I'll reserve full judgment on the group until we see what's happening with them.
But his partner there, I forgot her name, but she seemed to know.
Yeah, she just kept going.
She's like, this is the way it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I kept hoping, though, that he was going to just say to her, no, you don't have to do this. We'll take care of you. That's not what he said.
Nope.
He said, nope.
He said, I'm not going to force you. You can just leave.
Yeah.
you can go die, basically.
Right. Ugh.
He's like Negan.
Kind of, yeah.
He's exactly like
that's
that.
That's very similar.
Yeah. You don't have a purpose. I mean, it's about purpose, and that's what he viewed Janine's purpose is. Okay, well,
that's all they had was.
Yeah, that's all you have to
their
offer.
Their anatomy.
He has no clue what June has done.
Yeah.
It's like, she's so resourceful. You have no idea who you're dealing with. I mean, she could sneak in tomorrow night and take care of your problem permanently. So, yeah. All right, Wendy, did you have any other notes?
No, that is it for me.
I have a few.
You have a few. All right, Jason.
So I forgot to mention this last time, but it's been gnawing at me that when Janine and June and all the handmaids ran across the train tracks, but the others didn't make it, the train was going by and we saw the guy who had just shot two of them standing on the other side of the train. And then there were several cars missing where you could, you know, and June and Janine were just paused on the other side. I'm like, he really should still be firing that gun. I'm glad he didn't, but it just seemed a little ridiculous. It's like suddenly you're in a comedy where you're on the other side of the train just staring at each other when the empty cars go by or something.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
The camera just conveniently didn't go over in that direction and show him staring at them or whatever. What else? The milk truck, I'm not really sure if there would be that much light, if any, coming in. It looked like there were either holes or maybe like portals with glass or windows or whatever. But I wouldn't think you'd want to expose
it was a full moon.
The milk to light. Yeah, it was dark out. And so I guess that's artistic license, being nitpicky. Milk, I mean, I think it was a great thing to have this, them having to be in the back of this milk truck, because I've never seen anything like it. But I also think milk thematically, maybe because it has to do with mothers, and Janine's backstory was about her and her son and then her deciding to get an abortion, and also Rita's story is about, you know, kind of telling Fred about Serena's baby, so maybe that whole mother theme is in there. I don't know, maybe I'm stretching. And then the last note I had is I just really liked watching Rita make bread. It looked very peaceful and yummy when it was done, and I wanted to eat it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, that's all we have on the show. Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Well, So I've got a couple of news items, and these are mostly actually thought-provoking things that I was reading online. The first one is a Screen Rant article that's called Handmaid's Tale, Why Nick Isn't Helping June Escape Gilead. And it got me to thinking, you know, there were some things in the article like Nick says he's in love with June, but why did he capture her instead of helping her escape? Was it because he can't protect June if he helps her escape and then gets executed for it? Is he really loyal to Gilead and we don't know that and he wants to keep June there forever? Or did Nick engineer the timing and lack of security of the transport to the Magdalene colony, which allowed June the opportunity to escape? Because he did meet with her on the bridge, and it does prolong them getting to the tracks. So that raised some questions for me as far as, I don't know. I mean, Nick is not my favorite character. And I have questioned, you know, why isn't he doing more?
I don't think Nick is a good guy, but I am surprised at how many of our listeners and the feedback we've received are shipping Nick and June hard. So,
really?
You know, so obviously people are seeing something I'm just not seeing. And that's just my take. And I don't know if I'm right or not, but it seems that Nick's not all that he appears to be. And I think he's a bad
guy.
Good
or bad. Yeah. It's got to be because he appears to be a huge dud, in my opinion. But, but let me put that in a different way. Is he's so still and he doesn't reveal. He's got that one facial expression, so he doesn't reveal much about himself. So he's a mystery. And I think that might be one thing that people find attractive about him. But it also means we don't know for sure whether he's a good guy or a bad guy.
Well, and we never really got much backstory about Nick except when he met Price, who is, you know, the future Commander Price. And we never really got to know anything else, like his involvement in blowing up the Capitol.
And I think there's a lot there that we could, I think that would be great to have some backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have to say, I actually find him more interesting as a guy with power than I did as the driver.
Yes.
Agreed.
Well, because it makes me question even more. Why, you know, why aren't you doing anything?
What's up with this guy? Yeah.
What's going on?
Now I actually want to know. Whereas before I was just like, didn't really care that much.
Yeah. So the other article that I have is less about the actual story itself and more about the future of the show. And it's from The Hollywood Reporter. Back in 2018, the Hulu CEO, Randy Freer, told Variety that he saw The Handmaid's Tale running for 10 seasons. We know that the show's been renewed through season 5. And Bruce Miller, in this article on The Hollywood Reporter, said, and he's one of the writers, he said he'll keep going with the show for as long as Elizabeth Moss wants to do it. And that filming during the pandemic has had an impact on his long-term outlook for the series.
What kind of an impact, he doesn't say?
Not so much. He does say that based on all the work that Moss has put in this season, including serving as director for episode 3, she deserves to have me there writing for her as long as she wants. She earned that this year. I will write beautiful words for her to say for as long as she wants them.
I'd like to see it no more than 6.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10 is too much.
I think 6 would be reasonable.
Unless they do something really surprising where we go, oh, wow, I did not see that possibility. Great. But as it is now where it's already feeling kind of repetitive with her getting captured and then escaping.
Yeah.
And this is probably a pretty intense show for her to do. She's in so much of it. And. Yeah. You know.
I mean, if they do jump the shark, she's not going to like that. You know, it's so well regarded right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is a performance of a lifetime for her.
Don't Game of Thrones this show.
No, please don't. She knows what it's like to be on a successful show that ended at the right time.
Yeah.
Because of Mad Men.
Yes.
Also in this article, they brought up the fact that in September 2019, Hulu announced that they're going to develop a series based on The Testaments, which is the sequel to Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale book. Miller is already thinking about what role June might play in the follow-up series. He says June's story may not completely wrap up with The Handmaid's Tale. I have an ending for June's story, whether it comes in The Handmaid's Tale or comes when we're in another show may be a question. But I read the novel. I know how it ends.
I'm halfway through Testaments. It's so good.
I gotta read so, it.
Yeah, so, you know, less news, more of, okay, you know, thought-provoking how things could go. I just don't see her being in Testaments, but, you know, maybe they can work it out. I don't know. I'm with Jason, though. I think it needs to end by season six. As much as I enjoy it, I think it needs to end at a good time and stick the landing.
Yeah, when you start just extending something just to extend it or for ratings or it goes astray.
Walking Dead.
I feel like too you run the risk of actor actress contracts.
Yeah.
And having to write people out, and I just hate shows to get to that point because I have seen what happens too. When you get to that. So I'd rather they end it with the cast intact.
Where it would be creatively satisfying and not feel like there was outside forces.
I think six is good. Yeah. 5-6 is good.
Yeah.
Well, apparently that's not what they have in mind, so we'll have to see.
We'll see. I'm not sure.
Are you listening, know? Hulu?
Yes, Hulu.
Hello, Hulu.
So that really is all I have for news and news items this week. So... seems like we're ready to get into some listener feedback, which we have quite a bit.
So much, which is awesome because we are getting your feedback from the first three episodes of the show because we didn't have a chance to get any feedback for that yet, plus this one. So this is like four episodes worth of feedback here. And we're so grateful that you guys, we didn't know for sure how much we'd get in, but there's a lot, but it's great that you guys are writing in.
There is even a couple comments in here about the recap episode. So thank you, everybody. I can't tell you how much it means to hear that you're listening and it's reaching you. It's really motivating.
Yeah. But we're not going to read any of it, but thank you. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate it. I'm so excited to see so much feedback. And like I said, I haven't read any of it. So I'm just going to be seeing it, hearing it for the first time. So who wants to take the first one?
I'll go first. This is from Penny Lennox. I'm listening to your House Podcastica coverage of the new season of Handmaid's Tale and really enjoying the insights and observations. The show is so detailed and layered, and it enriches the experience to see it through more than one set of eyes. After listening to the first section, I rewatched Pigs, paying closer attention to Esther and June's growing relationship. It starts out with June seeing Esther as a child who needs to be protected, and then it shifts to seeing her as a child who is damaged, is a risk, and needs to be controlled. Then she has this realization that Esther, despite her youth, is as deserving as any of them to take full and active participation in May Day. June is raising an army, so why not this girl? This smart, strategic, fierce girl. The two are very similar. She also sees in Esther her fears and her hopes for Hannah. I think when she called Esther Banana at the end, it was because she was recognizing Esther as a metaphorical daughter and also hoping that Hannah is a fighter like Esther is. The resulting arrangement reminded me a little of the Watcher-Slayer dynamic on Buffy. Questions and stories I want to hear more of. How did Esther get those Mayday dudes assigned to her farm? It's revealed in the party scene that they're gay, so motivation is clear, but they are guardians or just townsfolk? What's the cover for them being on her farm? Honestly, I could watch a whole spinoff about Esther. She's that great.
I just thought they were guardians. Yeah, so that's normal for guardians to be a part of the household.
Right, that are, you know, rebelling in their ways than we know.
But it's not. But it wouldn't be like, what are those guys doing there? Because they just look like normal guardians.
Mark, more of Mark. He's such a fun character. He didn't just decide to tell the Waterfords the news about the plane in June. He decided how to use the information strategically against them. I love him. I agree with that. I want to see more too. Mark.
More Mark.
Holding out hope that Cherry Jones comes back.
Oh,
the biggest mystery presented by the next two episodes is Nick. What side is he really on? Is he for Mayday or Gilead? Does he really love June, or is he playing some kind of long con? Just because he wants to save her life doesn't mean he supports the resistance. Is he, like Joseph, hoping to craft a kinder Gilead, Gilead light, that can be accepted by the world? Or does he think he can arrange to get June assigned to him and then they can be together? And when do we get to find out about his past? The Swiss hinted at some major military background. It made it seem like he was a war criminal, or at least someone who was not ever meant to just be Fred's driver. I swear that lieutenant torturer with the youth pastor delivery is going to haunt my dreams. A special note for Jason. I love that you regularly point out the cinematography and production design. The show is beautifully crafted, and I could talk about specific shots all day. In Pigs, when June signaled to the other handmaids that the farm was safe and there was an overhead shot of them emerging from the trees, I gasped. Blessed be the fruit.
That's awesome.
Oh, that is great. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Penny, for sending that in. Mm-hmm. The next one's from Jody. She says, "Hi, Jason, Daphne, and Wendy. Thank you guys so much for podcasting The Handmaid's Tale. It's always really great to hear your thoughts on the show, especially as sometimes the show makes me quite angry, and it's always great to hear your analysis with thoughts I haven't always considered. Speaking of anger, I wanted to share with you my thoughts on Luke this season, because I'm incandescent with rage. June is in Gilead fighting for her life, being raped, being tortured, and fighting to defeat an entire nation with guerrilla warfare, and he is safe in Canada, bitching about the fact that June hasn't gotten out and come back to him yet. No, Luke, she's still in Gilead fighting to rescue Hannah. You remember Hannah, the daughter June was holding when you ran away from them both in the forest and got safely to Canada on your own. Your daughter. I was really hoping in the beginning of the episode with the campaigning he is clearly doing that he would do better this season, but instead he's being a little bitch baby, whining that his fucking warrior wife is still existing in a war zone as she works to save people, topple a regime, and bring Luke's daughter back to him. Holy shit, Luke. You can fuck right off, and you are not worthy of this woman, and I hate that you seem to have completely forgotten about your own daughter." Wow. And he kind of dragged Moira into it as well, which annoyed me. Come on, girl. You got out. Defend your friend and her bravery. Also, I think it speaks to the power of the constant threat of rape the show displays that when the soldiers strap June to the table in the torture chamber under the supervision of Aunt Lydia and the icky, pseudo-cheery man who was torturing her, and I was relieved when they waterboarded her instead of gang-raping her. I'm not getting over that scene anytime soon. I was so shocked at how relieved I was. Oh, just being waterboarded. Okay, that's better. And I am someone who has a fear of drowning. Jason, I'm a huge fan of the Podcastica Network and have been listening for years. Congratulations on what you've built here. It's wonderful. Thank you for listening. Don't get bit. Oops, wrong podcast. Sincerely, Jody.
Thank
love
you.
That, Jody. That's great. I love all your thoughts, Jerry.
Passion.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I had to say some of it, like, with the passion.
Yes, you did a good
I
job.
I could feel was coming from her because,
Jody, yeah. Become a Patreon subscriber.
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you, Jody. Next is Karen Medeiros, who says, "Couple of thoughts on your podcast of the first three episodes of Handmaid's Tale. First of all, I'm a huge fan of this podcast." Nice. "And the Walking Dead and Fear podcast too." Awesome. "First comment is that my understanding was that Serena was essentially one of the founders of Gilead and did a lot of work to get the revolution going and participating in the development of the laws, etc. In one earlier flashback episode, she's disappointed that the male leadership won't listen to her. So I assume that Fred became her mouthpiece within the revolution and government after that point. I think you're right, but I think the title of Serena's book was A Woman's Place. And it was, you know, a lot of what she was talking about was that, you know, I think it sprung from the fact that the fertility rate was really low. And so through her religious filter, just sort of equated that to meaning that it's because women are not in their quote unquote place anymore. So she wrote about a woman's place and then she found herself in that place. That's what I, and then it wasn't she didn't like it so much. That's what I took from it.
Yeah.
The second comment is that Nick loves June and does what he can to keep her alive, even when she has no interest in saving herself. In many ways, the point of the show is that the women need to save themselves and not rely on men. That's why Nick and Luke are kind of weak compared to June and the other main female characters. June is the heroine. The same with Commander Lawrence. Anyway, just some thoughts. Yeah, and who was it? Jody, I think, or that talking about, or maybe it was the email before that, Penny, about like whether one possibility might be that Nick is hoping that he can have June be his handmaid and be with him. And I'm like, wow, that would just,
wow,
that's not gonna happen.
Be fucked up. Yeah.
And if that's what he wants, that's, he's not in the same world.
Yeah. Not down.
But I do think it does point in that direction that he's still loyal to Gilead. Mm-hmm. He thinks he can change it to be better, but that's
really, is that what you think?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not saying
today.
No,
I don't know. That's what she thinks today.
Yeah. All right. This is from Amber S. Blessed be the fruit. I just started listening and I'm loving the podcast. Well done. I love diving deep into the episodes and hearing your opinions. I do want to chime in real quick, if I may. Around 1 hour 50 minutes in our last podcast, when you're discussing Serena and Fred's motivations, intentions, more specifically whether Fred is a true believer and simply falls short or is intentionally being deceptive in order to manipulate those around him. There is an episode where it flashes to him sitting in a car and discussing the issue of infertility with two older men. One of the older men is suggesting that the fertile women should be collected and impregnated by those of superior status, of course. This is when the idea of the wives participating is introduced by Fred. They try to use the scripture to justify the wrongful act. The wives would eat that shit up, the other man continues. It's season 1, episode 8. One of the men also says in a season 4 scene that it isn't about the children, but about the power. I firmly feel like Fred is twisting the scripture to make rules in his favor. Yes, they feel it's necessary to impregnate the women, but don't consider any other options, such as using healthier, younger, stronger men, women's choice, or even their consent. Also, consider the other rules that Fred broke daily, allowing his wife to smoke, his drinking, calling June into his quarters, allowing her to read, the brothels, drugs, lies. I wouldn't trust this guy as far as I can throw him. Thanks for listening to my take on it, and I look forward to listening to more of yours. Under his eye, Amber.
I mean, wow. It sounds like you're saying that you think Fred is totally using religion to get power and doesn't believe any of it. I don't know if you actually said that, but it sounds like that's what you're saying, and I think you could be, if that's what you're saying, you could be absolutely right. But I also think it could be just as easily right that it, just people are hypocrites and illogical, and I think people who do believe in it doesn't have to be religion, but thing, they'll make exceptions in their mind for themselves and rationalize it, you know. So I think he could be a guy who, because look at what happens in religion today. You have priests sleeping with little boys, and you have televangelists getting together with prostitutes and stuff like that. And I mean, maybe all the people who are doing all the bad things don't actually believe in God, and they're just saying it in order to fool everyone. But I don't think so. I think people are just irrational and hypocritical.
He could be faithful and still be using that faith to manipulate others.
Right. Absolutely. And even make exceptions for himself in his own mind or something.
And justify it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that. So Alicia Stout wrote in about pigs. She says, I didn't know what to think of Esther at first. I kind of hated her especially for making Janine eat the pig. But at the same time, I felt sorry for her being a wife so young. Then when she tells June her story, I lost it. This was such a different side of this show we haven't seen much of, and frankly, I'm not sure what's more horrifying. Esther's constant rape, the torture of the handmaids, Serena's torture by Fred, or just life in Gilead. When June gave Esther the knife, OMG, she gave permission for a child to murder. I'm not sure what to think of that exactly. An eye for an eye? Gonna have to wrap my mind around that one for a bit. Be right back. Gotta go pour me a drink.
Yep.
Totally get it, Alicia. I still go back to McKenna Grace was just so fantastic playing the role of Esther.
Yeah, I hope we see her again soon.
I do too. Ugh.
Okay, Kelly. How do you say Kelly's last name? Burgess.
Yep.
Kelly Burgess. Hey, Kelly says, I really don't know what I feel about the episode. Which one is she talking about? The first one? Which honestly is why I love this show. It horrifies me at the same time that it amazes me with what these women go through and then wind up doing. The strength they show is immense. I can't wait to see what Commander Lawrence does. I seriously thought he was going to get executed in the chair. Glad that he wasn't. I need more of his wit to get me through the rough parts. And the way, I don't know the actor's name, but I know he was big on West Wing, but he's so great.
He was.
He just adds so much character to whatever he's doing. She goes on, episode 2. I almost couldn't watch the last 5 minutes because I was so afraid of what June was going to find. What was that at the end of episode 2?
That's when they get back
to the cottage and find that
everyone's gone.
Nick is there with the Guardians.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. The music at the end was so beautiful and haunting. Loved how it started out so subtle and then grew louder. The show is just so fantastic in so many ways. I love seeing the boy in Canada and how Rita was brought in to help him. So much trauma that everyone's dealing with. I like it showing how just because people get out doesn't mean that they're better. Fred is as despicable as ever. Serena is a character that I have an empathy for. Yes, she's done really heinous things, but she's been brainwashed by the religion. She's also a brainwasher, but yeah.
Yeah, she is.
On to episode 3. Just finished episode 3. I gasped out loud with the train. These last few minutes keep killing me a little more each time. I know, that was rough. I'm so glad this show's back. I don't think there's another show that makes me feel such a range of emotions. The bad part about binging these first 3 is now I have to wait a week for more. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on all this. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks,
Kelly's in the Patreon. Yeah, I don't talk about the Patreon much. I should probably start mentioning it on here, but we have this group and it's my Patreon, patreon.com/JasonCabassi. And we all have a ton of fun on there. And Daphne's like our cruise director who creates all these activities for us. We're in the middle of a video game golf tournament right now, and it's great, and we talk about all these shows and stuff,
and we're all meeting up in real life in the fall.
We are It's gonna be awesome.
It's been an incredible support to me during the pandemic. I don't know what I would have done without it, so I definitely, if you're interested, please, you will get your money's worth and then some.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the way people left feedback, like episode 1, episode 2, episode 3. It was like you were watching it with them and seeing their reactions.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
Thanks,
yeah,
Kelly.
I like it.
Lisa Moreno writes about episode 1. So this episode was so good. At first, I wasn't sure about Esther, but once she told June why she wants to get revenge, it made sense. I knew once June consented to executing that guy, it served to placate a young child bride's need for revenge. And therefore keeping her from losing it and endangering them all. And obviously, June saw what Hannah's future could be like. I think in that moment, it gave her control over Esther. It's so good to be back. Episode 2. I can't imagine the PTSD these women have endured, even worse than when they're not free yet. Even the kids who were freed must be enduring so much confusion. It was so nice to see Rita, and I think she's going to help that little boy accept his new life. So it seems the men of Gilead have Jezebel stashed everywhere. This new place is going to be a whole lot more emptier now. Damn, and of course they couldn't escape without a hiccup. Damn, I really just don't know how to feel about Nick. I just don't get him, and him fighting for the side of Gilead, ugh, makes me sick. I don't think I forgot, Serena is pregnant. By whom exactly? Because I thought Fred was sterile. Maybe not.
Nope.
Episode 3. Wow. Well, this one was a much more difficult one. They have mastered the art of psychological warfare. Breaking June took a lot, but they finally did it. I'm not sure what they told Hannah to make her scared, but they obviously messed with her. I didn't think they were going to die from the train. So crazy. I know, Jason, you like more of this hopeless side of the show, and that's where you feel it should stay. As a woman, there's too much of this keeping women down in the real world. Obviously not to these extremes, but in other ways that are quite damaging to many women. I, for one, want to see women empowerment and them fighting for themselves, rising out of the ashes and taking their power back. I want to see those silver linings and see them come back strong. I know the show has had hard moments, but I always see their power in so many scenes. And when it seems bleak, it can be as little as a look from June. And that right there tells me that they will not get the best of her. Overall, amazing 3 episodes, and it's going to be a crazy season. Thanks, Lisa.
No, that's not exactly what I said, Lisa. I don't want it to stay hopeless. I just thought maybe if it was only a one season show that it would be more powerful that way, because it wouldn't satiate us, and so we would feel like this is meant to disturb us and keep us alert. But then I always say, if it's going to keep going like it is, then it needs to be a show about a revolution and you know, like you're saying, these women coming back and turning things around. I don't want to see misery porn. Like, that's kind of why I didn't really like the episode where June got captured and tortured. And now June's just going right back to wanting to be with Mayday and fighting again. So I'm like, okay, so what was the point of that? We lost some handmaids, so maybe that was the point, otherwise, like, were we just supposed to get some kind of entertainment out of that? Like, I don't know. So I don't want to see just season 1 over and over again. I want to see, since the show is going to keep going, I want to see the fall of Gilead.
Yeah. I definitely do too. I want to see piece by piece. I don't want it all to be in one episode. I want to see people go down for the despicable things that they've done.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
But if there's a war there's got to be drama on the other hand, so
yeah.
If it's all just nicey nice, that's not going to be good either. So if there's some kind of a war with Canada that puts the people we think is safe in danger, as like scary as that seems, I think it could be really a great
exciting TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our next one is from Jess Sadie Mae McPherson. And she says, I love that you guys played Karma Police between breaks, not just because it's a great song and fitting for the show, but it reminds me of my favorite Radiohead song, which is used in episode 3.
Yeah, that's what kind of made me think of it, because they played Radiohead, who I love too. So I'm glad you like that. JC Harris says, I'm still working through the Marathon podcast. It's terrific so far. Thank you. Great work, and looking forward to the rest of the season with you guys. Thanks. She also gave us feedback about the recap episode. She says, just finishing listening to your guys' recap, it was awesome, and I was sad when it ended, because even though it was like 2 hours long, I could have listened for 2 more hours. I'm excited for you all to cover the upcoming season. I would not be upset if you separated the first 3 episodes into 3 podcasts. We sort of did, but we just stuck them all into one.
Yeah.
Thank you for the recap, and thank you in advance for the upcoming episodes. Absolutely.
So glad you liked it, JC. Yeah. We had fun, you know, talking about that. I feel like it got us ready to podcast about this season.
Chelsea Roberts writes, I have gone full tin foil. Serena is pregnant, assuming that she hasn't been unfaithful. The baby is Fred's, which means that Fred is not sterile, which is what was assumed by everyone in the show and in real life as to why Serena nor any of the handmaids got pregnant. With this new knowledge, what if Nicole really is Fred's baby and not Nick's? During the time when June would have conceived, Fred was taking her to the brothel and raped her many times. Even more interesting is Fred's comment to Serena about Nicole. She is no more your child than she is mine. Maybe that line is purposefully facetious.
Ooh.
I think at that point, he had no clue that this child might be his.
Oh, but boy.
Now he knows.
Yep.
It's so difficult. Like, for me to even, I can't even imagine what that would just change so much.
Yeah.
If that's the case. I mean, that puts Nicole at risk, kind of.
But Fred would still, and Serena, I think, would still be in the same trouble, though.
Yeah.
Because Serena's mostly in trouble because she had June sleep with Nick. And even if they didn't have a baby as a result of that, I think she'd still be in trouble for it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, that is just not something I had considered because everyone said, no, he's sterile.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So Lindsay Schlicht wrote in with some notes on, it looks like Handmaid's Tale episode 2. Yikes. Fed the Guardian guy to the pigs. Brutal. Still not sure what to think of Mrs. Keyes. I feel sorry for her, but also feel like she cannot be trusted and will cost them all dearly in the end. June's attachment to her seems very risky as well. I'm really glad they included the scenes with Asher and showed how everything is not perfect now. I hope the situation can give Rita a purpose too, to help the rescued kids assimilate to their new lives. That final scene, once again, was amazing. The visual of June covered in laser sights was so scary. I was glad to hear Nick ask where the handmaids were, since it means they've somehow escaped. But now what for June? I hope Nick has some kind of plan and isn't just the jackass he seems to be now. So far, I'm loving this season. Yeah, I have to agree. I go back and forth on Nick. He's not my favorite, as I've said, but yeah, I don't know.
I feel like we just need to know more about what's going on with him so we can judge him appropriately, yeah. I guess.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Sylvia Dylan Shank says, agree with all, especially the part, I'm not sure what she's agreeing with, Lindsay, especially the part regarding Asher /James. Yes, that was so realistic and sad. I also love the Luke scenes. I'm always happy when they show Canada because it's like I can breathe, since whenever we're in Gilead, I'm holding my breath.
Oh, you know, yes.
Yeah, I know. I feel that way too.
Yeah, I feel
like, more relaxed.
Yes, this is a sense of calm and safety. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're in Gilead, it's like, yeah, it's like, what the heck is going to happen next? You just don't know. So, yeah, I totally get that.
Lena Winter writes, we only watched the first two, but this season is off to a great start.
Oh, yeah. Mary Kay Beater Vegman Owen says, I think the point of Serena's pregnancy was to call into question who Nicole's father is. Now that we know Fred isn't impotent, she could be his child. Especially with that line from him about Nicole being no more Serena's child than his. I wouldn't be remotely shocked if Serena has a miscarriage, since I think her baby is just a plot device for them to go after Nicole. Regarding your talk about Lost, I just watched seasons 1-3 of Handmaid's Tale for the first time a few months ago. I kept thinking about how many shows took the Lost flashback format and improved upon it. And then, I saw June at the end of season 3 lying on the ground when the plane took off, satisfied that she died there, at least she saved all those people. Remind you of any doctor's name Jack you might know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
maybe. We're not telling.
No.
That's great. India Michelle just said, the Waterfords need to croak, man. LOL.
I thought that was hilarious. Shannon Steele Dufault says, well, this is amazing as fuck and still terrifying and fucked. The way it's shot is so fucking gorgeous. Oh my God. It's a cinematic masterpiece when it comes to the use of light and color.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird feeling to be like, this horrible place is so beautiful.
Yes, this scene with June having blood all over her is just so cinematically wonderful. Shot.
Yeah. But it is, it's effective, but
yeah, it is.
Then you feel bad for thinking, "Oh, it's good because it's effective."
It's effective not just because it's pretty, but because it's also kind of oppressive in how detailed it feels like. Such a controlled environment, you know?
Yeah.
Everything in its place.
Yeah. which is why I think I enjoy the Canada stuff and can breathe because
it's more loose and relaxed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So Alma Contreras says, wow, this first episode is intense. Mrs. Keys, oh shit, they got June. Fucking Nick. I knew these two would be reunited.
That's hilarious. So there, here's some comments on episode 4. First from Barbie Allen. She says, I love that Rita is holding on to her freedom and independence and leaving Fred and Serena to deal with their own lives. I was worried that her innate kindness and compassion would make her vulnerable to being pulled into their world again, especially after her visit with Serena. But she asserted herself with Fred, and it seems like she's making a clean break from the Waterfords. Praise be. Love the Janine backstory and seeing her with her son, and I love that she stood up to June regarding Alma and the other handmaids. Yes, June has been to hell and back for them all. She has masterminded the escapes, and she was pretty much forced to reveal the handmaid's location. But I still appreciated seeing Janine stand up to her and get some of the things off her chest for a change. I mean, yeah, it reminds me of, it just popped into my head, when June was getting all the kids out, and one kid was giving her trouble. I forget what it was, but she like pointed a gun at the kid.
Yeah.
Remember that? So it's like, yes, I'm saving you, and you better get on board, or I'm going to kill you. It's like she's,
yeah,
she's pretty intense.
Yeah,
she is.
She goes on, and how sad was it to hear that Alma was the one to say they had to wait for June? Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that, but Janine was like, Alma waited for you because she loved you. They all loved you at the farm. I conclude with this thought: if June is this show's Rick Grimes. Oh, she totally is. I love that
she
so
is.
Much. Please let Janine be its Daryl Dixon. I want to see her survive all this. Last,
yes!
Last woman
yes!
standing, right?
100%. Oh
that's
my
so
gosh.
Great, Barbie.
I never thought of it that, Barbie. Never thought of that. Oh, it's
so
great.
Well said, Barbie. I love your feedback. Okay, yeah. Last but never least is my friend Alex Baelish. After the whirlwind of the first three episodes, I'm so glad they are back on the run again. Batshit crazy Serena strikes again, asking to speak to Rita like she had not tortured her enough, thinking everything is okay now that she is with child. I love how she can't wait to tell Rita. Rita right now is my favorite character this season. Her struggle to make sense of this effed up world is so hard to watch. She has so much love to give, like when she cooked for Asher to make him feel more comfortable. Now that she finds out there is no record of her family, this breaks my heart. I do believe she is truly happy for Serena. I can't wait to see who the father is. Well, as you can see, this world is never black or white. It's very milky. The pirates, not Mayday, is at the border to greet them with open arms. It's so crazy how power works. Winner sets the rules and writes the history, but in true Janine form, she gets the job done for June. You can say what you want about that girl, but she is as much of a survivor as June under his milky white eye. That's great, Alex.
I think Alex was the only guy to write in. If there's more guys listening, I'd love to hear from you, hear your perspective
That's true.
About this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex is a big fan of this show.
Thanks, everybody, for the feedback. And yeah. I hope I didn't miss anybody, but please keep it coming. It's so wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if we're going to give our contact info at the end. If you want, you can also email us a voicemail. You know, just go into your voice app on your phone and record yourself. And then if you like what you said, just email it to us and we'll play it on the podcast, too. It'd be fun to hear some of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks everybody for all of your comments. We really appreciate it. I love learning someone else's perspective on the show that we've just talked about. So it's always really exciting. All right, that's our show. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
If you'd like to write in or record a message, as Jason just said, and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And that's actually a /.
Sorry.
They might try a /. I don't know if it'll work. I could try it out.
My husband would be so ashamed.
It's okay.
Wendy's been on vacation.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica.
Next time on the podcast, The Handmaid's Tale, Season 4, Episode 5, titled Chicago.
Will it be a war zone?
I don't know, but I want to see more.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see. I'm going to watch it now.
And podcasting about this, I already like the episode, but just talking about it with all you guys and hearing the messages made me like it even more.
Yeah.
I like it. I feel even more connected to the show. Like,
yeah.
Because I feel like we're all watching it together and we're just having a conversation about it. Not just the three of us, but everyone who wrote in as well. So it's making it even more exciting.
And if you want to watch a much worse show, you can hear me talking about Fear the Walking Dead over on Walking Dead Cast.
I finally listened to yours and Lucy's transcript of the writer's room in the Fear of the Walking Dead. That was just gold.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Loved it.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Lucy's so freaking clever.
She'll have to do more of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're watching Fear because you're, you know, a loyalist and you keep, or if you love the show, well, you probably shouldn't listen to us if you love the show.
I've been really busy over at Run for Your Lives with my good friend Paik, and we just released a really funny episode on The Happening, which is an older movie. And this week we're
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's quite a movie. And yeah, my opinion about it from the beginning of the podcast to the end may have changed, but nice. Yeah, you'll have to listen to get to get that information. And this week we're covering a really cool movie called The Wandering Earth. It's a Chinese science fiction film. It's one that was really their foray into the science fiction genre. And so
it's
we had
nuts.
A lot of thoughts on
I
that.
I saw that.
Yeah.
It's a crazy movie.
It is pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. And if you guys want to join in on the fun with Patreon, just go to patreon.com/JasonCabassi.
Come join us. We have lots of fun. All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
We're not mushrooms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.